So this is going to be a slight departure from our typical greeting that we do. I would like us to do more of a silent acknowledgement of our sharing this journey of life. So find somebody, or maybe several people, stay where you are, but just looking across the room, make eye contact, smile, nod your head, and try and silently connect with somebody you know already, and perhaps somebody you don't know yet.
We light our chalice this morning in gladness for this beautiful day we have been given, for joy of being together, and for the love of this beloved community. Spirit likes to dress up like this. 10 fingers, 10 toes, shoulders, and all the rest. At night, in the black branches. In the morning, in the blue branches of the world. It could float, of course, but would rather plumb rough matter. Airy and shapeless thing, it needs the metaphor of the body. Come, let us worship together. Our opening hymn can be found in the gray hymnal, number 361. Please rise as you are able and remain standing for the cup. Spirit of life, let us be grateful for our bodies, no matter how imperfect they are. Let us be grateful for hands that hold, arms that embrace, feet that touch the earth, toes that dig in the sand. Let us be grateful for skin that feels the warmth of the sun, or the kiss of the rain, or the bite of winter cold. Our bodies help us perceive the wonder and joy and pain of this world. Let us be grateful for our bodies, for they are the house of the soul. Amen, and blessed be.
The theme this month has been inner wisdom and guidance, and I'm going to continue that theme, but with a little different twist. Several years ago, I came across a story detailing how Native Americans long ago navigated the ocean in their canoes. It is said that they would sit in the bottom of the canoe with their most sensitive parts closest to the water and sense the currents for guidance. Although there is no real way to ever verify this story, I find it inspiring nonetheless to imagine such sensitivity through one's body to the environment, guiding direction. History suggests a much more celebrated and holistic view of the body than I think is common today, and a deeper connection to the natural world, the body as sacred link between heaven and earth. In fact, human dissection and autopsy was inconceivable for a very long time because it was considered an offense to the body and to God. From my understanding, it was eventually allowed by the Vatican, but only if those performing the dissection made no reference to anything divine. They had to adhere strictly to anatomy. But I don't think we can so easily separate the two. The body is divine. It houses our soul and gives us the ability to have an individual experience. It is a sacred container and is equipped with tremendous wisdom to help us navigate while we're here, to help us connect to others and the environment, and to enable us to learn and love and grow. Attitudes toward the body have changed much over the years and for many varied reasons. I'll throw out just a few theories. First, in general, a more mechanistic view has prevailed. Norman Doidge, he's a psychiatrist who's written extensively on neuroplasticity. Anybody's familiar with him, which is the brain's ability to adapt and change at any age. He attributes this to several things, this mechanistic view, beginning with Galileo's studies with telescopes and his mechanical descriptions of the planets, to humans' increased use of and reliance on machines, culminating in the industrial age. And these same ideas dominating science and culture started to be applied to the body as well, with many describing the body like a machine with systems of pulleys and pumps and isolated parts. Anything that was not viewed in this way was considered unscientific and unworthy. Religious teachings have played a role as well. Although the body is sometimes referred to as a temple, the same traditions will often portray body as a source of bondage and sinfulness, or at best, a distraction or hindrance to our spiritual advancement. And this is particularly among the asceticism sects that can be found in many different religious traditions. I came across an article recently. It was written by a rabbi who was trying to challenge some of these attitudes. And he writes, "What would it be like if we started to think about the holiness of our intestines?" Also, building over many years, and no doubt for many reasons, there's been a rise in the importance of the mind above all else. In the early 1600s, prominent thinker René Descartes may have helped to foster this with his famous declaration, "I think, therefore I am." This emphasis on the mind as of the utmost continues today, and in a way, I think does a disservice to the rest of the human experience. There is much more to us that makes us whole. What would it be like to consider instead, I feel, therefore I am? I also sometimes wonder if traditional meditation might encourage disconnectedness in some people. Just to be clear, I'm not knocking meditation. I've had a daily practice for nearly 20 years. But traditional meditation, which is considered kind of a top-down approach, is not useful for everyone all of the time. For those who are prone to headiness or that mind above all attitude, or who have various psychological challenges, meditation could be disoriented and sometimes lead to a sense of disembodiment. And that's not so useful for life on Earth. Sometimes a somatic approach or bottom-up approach, such as the one we did today, I gave you a little hint, a little taste of that, might be a better choice. And somatic basically means body. I know that for myself, there are days when I feel thrown out of balance from spending all day researching and learning and just being in my head too much. And the best practice for me on those days is to just ground in the body, to get rooted. There are cultural considerations as well. Most of the westernized world has become a culture of doing. We are valued in terms of how much we can accomplish and contribute. Do more, feel less. We have become ruled by external clocks rather than internal feelings of hunger or sleep-wake cycles. And social media pulls us even further from our inner experience by encouraging us to see ourselves from an outside perspective rather than trusting our inner intelligence. Like, how many likes did I get on my post today? There's been a rise over the past few decades in what's been called diseases of disembodiment. Some examples are PTSD, anxiety, depression, gut disorders, eating disorders, substance abuse. So when our coping mechanisms are not optimally functioning, being overwhelmed by life can cause us to just check out, in a sense. And avoidance and disembodiment becomes the coping mechanism. Fortunately, many therapists and neuroscientists are looking at involving the body a lot more in the cure. The relatively new field of somatic psychology, for instance, recognizes that talking alone is often inadequate because, as the adage goes, the issues are in the tissues. The Department of Defense recently completed a large-scale study using somatic meditation, a type called yoga nidra, to treat veterans with PTSD. And the results were so positive that the DOD has now made it a part of their standard treatment protocol across the country. The basic idea is that you have to go in to go out. You have to go into the body, learn what you can, to then become free of the trauma. Psychologist slash yoga teacher Bo Forbes writes a lot on this idea and put it to the test in a very personal way. She had suffered PTSD from a botched surgery and doctor mistake, and as a result, she felt really disembodied for a number of years. So she really looked at this idea. She needed a surgery to correct the doctor error and decided to have the surgery without general anesthesia. Her theory was that by being fully present and awake during the ordeal, she would find her way back into her body and begin the healing process. Not only did she experience psychological healing and relief from her trauma, but her physical recovery too was dramatically faster than expected. Not that we all should do something so drastic, but it's just inspiring, this idea of being present rather than checking out to bring wholeness and healing. Researchers have been using somatic approaches to treat survivors of human trafficking, those with eating disorders, chronic pain, and substance abuse, and seeing very promising results. So why does this approach work? I think a lot of reasons. First, simply coming home to the body creates a sense of ownership and empowerment. In the Department of Defense example, the vets were first really fearful of the experience and leery of just reigniting their trauma, but soon found it to be freeing because the treatment, in their words, the treatment came and the healing came from within themselves rather than from an outside force being placed on them, such as, you know, from a therapist or a pill. Also, the body provides information that might not be cognitively available. Again, our issues get stored in our tissues. Even if we are not able to recall something with the brain, the body still remembers. Just 2 weeks ago, a friend told me of a story. She had a medical procedure in the last few months, and apparently she was given a drug intended to block the memory of this difficult procedure to minimize trauma. But the memory's not gone. It lives in her body. She feels it, but she's sort of lost the ability to link it to her cognition because it was removed in that way. So memory is stored in the body, and insight is stored there as well. When we tap into what we feel deep inside the body, it can lead to more conscious living. So let's use hunger as an example. Let's say it's 10 o'clock at night and you feel hunger pangs. And you're thinking about the hunger, and then you're thinking about the half gallon of ice cream in the freezer, or maybe it's the family-sized bag of Lay's potato chips in the cabinet, and how nicely you could make that hunger go away. It is the mind that focuses on the desired outcome, making hunger go away with the ice cream or the chips. However, if we could remain with the sensory experience, the felt sense in the body, we stay with the idea of hunger itself, not with the thought of assuaging hunger. This is a powerful point, I think. Some of these some of these ideas are inspired by a neuroscientist and researcher named Norm Farb. Anybody wants to look him up? Stay with the sensory experience of pure hunger and not with the mind's idea of making the feeling go away, the end result. Why is this important? The more we become aware of our felt sense, the more consciously we act and the less likely we are to soothe away discomforts without even realizing what we're doing by binge eating or binge watching television or anything else. Although I seem to be suggesting we can easily separate mind and body, and that's not really possible. They're inextricably linked. The Buddha said, and many neuroscientists are starting to agree, everything which arises in the mind first starts flowing with a sensation in the body. So the body senses and tells the mind how to interpret and act upon the information. Also, mind perceives, and what it perceives is felt in the body. In fact, this relates to our survival as a species. Somatic approaches work perhaps because they link back to our biology. The body is designed to continually seek a state of balance known as homeostasis. The body's loaded with receptors that receive signals about our status and our needs, and the signals are evaluated, and then an action results. One example might be thirst. You have a felt sense of thirst, so you get a drink of water and you bring your system back into balance. Or we might even have a gut feeling that something is not right and we need to make a quick change in plans or direction. Also, our best learning comes from a holistic experience where we engage multiple dimensions of our being. Good school teachers know this when they incorporate movement with math, for example. We don't learn by mind alone. And there's a program that's gaining ground throughout the world called Brain Gym that works a lot with this idea of learning through movement. Nikos Kazantzakis, who's best known as author of The Last Temptation of Christ, he writes, "Within me, even the most metaphysical problem takes on a warm physical body, which smells of sea and salt and human sweat. The word, in order to touch me, must become warm flesh. Only then do I understand, when I can smell, see, and touch." And finally, somatic approaches work because the body becomes an anchor to the present moment. Think about what distracts you from your sense of well-being, what interrupts a peaceful day for you. Probably for most of us, it's some fretting about the past or worrying about the future. The solution then is to be present, and the body becomes the means. I think we all know too well that the mind is capable of flying through time and space faster than anything, but the body can't do that. The body can only be in the here and now, and so it becomes our link to landing. This divine instrument of the body is not just for getting around, but it provides a key to our well-being. So I want to be clear that I'm not advocating vanity, and that would be external objectification, and I'm definitely not suggesting we should worship the body as who we are. I believe that body is animated by spirit, and that is our goal, to find spirit and our eternal selves. But the body is an important first step towards beginning this inward journey, where we connect with and appreciate all our divine gifts with all their perceived imperfections, where we find our wholeness, and like the Native Americans in their canoes, we learn to sense and trust the inner wisdom that helps us live consciously and that ultimately guides us back home. Thank you.
Thank you.
we close with these words from Thich Nhat Hanh. Some people think it's a miracle to walk on water. I think the real miracle is walking on earth. Go in peace to love and to serve. Amen.